Hey there, it's Dr. Heidi. You're listening to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, a podcast geared towards the things you may be misunderstanding about the difficult relationships in your life. I did not understand it when I was in it, but I definitely understand it now, and I want to share that understanding with you so that you too can find the courage you didn't know you had to make the changes you didn't think you could make. Quick announcement. When people hear the word retreat, we think we have to take 7 days off and explain where we're going and what we're doing so that we can have permission from people. I'm here to announce that my very well-known Priority Me retreat is back, but this time it is available to any and all without having to worry about travel, time off work, kids' schedules, or explaining your whereabouts to anybody. It's scheduled Monday, May 13 through Friday, May 17. It will be run entirely through a Facebook group, so it's super easy to access the links and the information you need. Each day of the retreat is set to be very interactive if you choose to join during the day, or if you want to do the retreat on your own, you can do it at night or through the following weekend by watching the recordings. It's your turn. What are we waiting for? We always think someday I'm going to take care of myself. Someday I'm going to start. And it's very overwhelming to know where to start. So for more information on the Priority Me retreat, which teaches us where to start, you can look in the show notes, a description. There's a link for more descriptions on the retreat. You can find the registration link. You can also find the podcast patron discount code if you are wanting to join in on the retreat in May. Let's start making ourselves a priority. Yes, and today I have to tell you, this is something I don't think I've ever done before, just reaching out and snatching a guest like out of the blue. But something made me contact the guest we're having today. And what it was in the Strength Within group, which is the support group that I run on Facebook. It's a private group. It started out very, very small, and it started out to support people through the holidays in 2018, and it was going to run it for 3 months, and I was going to shut it down. And I think there was about 20 people in it when I was going to shut it down, and they asked if I would not. There is almost 7,000 people in Strength Within now. The thing that I boast about Strength Within is, for most, it's a place that you can go that you don't have to worry that people aren't going to understand you. Finding a support system through the emotionally abusive relationship and after that understands you is very, very difficult. And within the Strength Within group, you really don't have to explain yourself, because even though everybody's situation is a little bit different, the foundation of emotional abuse and the effects that it has on us is very, very similar. So if you're looking for a group, that would be a good support group. It's Strength Within. It is private. You have to answer some questions, but I am the only one that sees the answers, and I'm the only one that admits people. So I screen it pretty well if you're worried about safety. But moving on, I try to be in there every day. That is a lofty goal because I am very, very busy. But I happened to jump in there the other morning, and I saw a post that made me want to know more about someone. And I'm going to read you this post. It says, "I thought you were lying to me. I thought you were when you said the peace I would gain on the other side would be better than being in a relationship. I couldn't wrap my head around leaving. I couldn't picture myself alone. The stories I told myself about loneliness, the lies. But it turns out you weren't lying at all. Of course you weren't. We're sisters. So thank you to all the women who shared their stories about leaving and finding peace after the relationship. I finally know what you mean. And although it's only been 2 months, let me just say, never underestimate just how much peace you can cultivate in a short period of time. To all the women who are still in it, trust. When they talk about the afterlife, the life after toxicity, it's not a lie. And I can attest to that now." And I read that and I printed it out because I keep things like this in a folder for the days I'm not feeling good. And I go back to the folder and I read the posts from people who are doing well because of the work that I do. We all need encouragement. And I printed this out and I thought, I think I talked to her once. Turns out I did not speak to her on the phone. We messaged back and forth just a little bit. And it wasn't 2 seconds. And I reached back out and asked her if she would be willing to tell you guys a little bit about her experience since she's so just recently out. So I have her here today, and she is absolutely adorable. And I can't wait to hear. I still don't know much about her story, so you guys are hearing it the same time I am. So, Cass, I want to welcome you to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for allowing me to go. It'll be 10 more minutes. Wait, it'll be 10 more minutes. It'll be, wait, my microphone's not working. I had a little bit chaotic morning, and she's just very okay with it. So when you posted that, I felt so much peace in that post. Tell us a little bit about you and where you were when you found the podcast and when you found that group.
Yeah, well, Heidi, thank you so much for letting me be on the podcast. It's been godsend, and honestly, I can say that just hearing your voice, you give us tough love. You say the things that a lot of people kind of tiptoe around. And when I would listen to you, actually, I found your podcast last April when I had just moved in with my parents for 3 months with my son and my now ex-partner. And I was training for a half marathon, and I was like, hey, I want to listen to something while I'm running. And then I came across your podcast, and I was like, I was obsessed. So every day when I was running for hours at a time, I'm listening to your podcast, and it's like, you're just in my ear there with me the whole time. And I'm like, this girl gets it. And I loved every single episode. And then I joined the group, and I can't remember if I posted right away or not. I think I was a little bit nervous, so I was kind of standoffish. And then when I really needed someone to talk to, I didn't share stuff with my family anymore because that really created isolation, and it made them not like my ex-partner, which I could totally get. And so I was like, well, I'll preserve the relationship for as long as I can because I was choosing to stay. And instead, I'll turn to this amazing community that Heidi has created. And the outpouring support that I got from each and every single person in there, it makes me emotional because it's like, they don't have to be doing that. They don't have to be saying those things. They don't have to be available to me. But every single time I needed someone, I knew that there was someone that would respond. And it wasn't even usually just one person. It was like 5, 10, 15 women there to support and not to bash the part, not to bash the person, because we're not in there to bash people. We're in there just to support and uplift one another. And we're trying to get out of the toxicity, not bring toxicity into the group. And so I thought that the group had such an amazing balance, and everyone was so available, and I can't thank everyone enough in there, including of course you for creating the group. And for always being like showing up for your podcast and stuff. I know how vulnerable it must have been for you, especially because of your story. You had a lot more investment and turbulence in yours than I can in comparison. And so I just yeah, I'm just so grateful. I'm not sure if you want me to go into this story at
Well,
all.
the first thing I'll tell you is I can't think of anything worse than running miles and listening to me. Like
No, it was great. I was like,
that's
I'm
like
plugging in my
torture.
girl Heidi.
I don't run unless something's chasing me. So that's funny. It does still surprise me to this day, because I didn't plan on doing this podcast. I didn't plan on doing this work. And I do this work because I know what I needed when I was in it that I didn't have. And so all this, like when you talk about the group and you talk about how much support and how much encouragement and how much education the podcast gave you, I am oblivious to that. And I just do what I do because I don't even know why, because it's just my calling. So some of the things that when you hear a speaker, you latch on to certain things that you resonate with. And when I hear people go, well, when you said that, it totally changed my perspective. And it just amazes me sometimes. It could be the littlest, tiniest thing. I might not even remember saying it. And it's that that keeps me going. You know, if the littlest, tiniest thing that I don't remember saying about my life or my experience or, you know, something I did wrong, which is usually I did it this way, let's not do that. It is very inspirational, and I know this is where I'm supposed to be. What did your life look like when you found the podcast? You said you were living with your mom and dad, you had just moved in. What was the relationship like? And you can go into as much detail as you want. How did you the relationship start?
We were together for 5 years. We were actually friends in elementary school, and so when we reconnected, it felt like fate. It was an instant connection. There was fire. I felt like we were the only ones in the room, to the point that I was like, well, this is obvious to everyone. We should probably make it less obvious. And so it was like everything I ever could have imagined. He was like so in love with me right away. And I wasn't looking for a relationship at that time. But it just came, and I was like, wow, this is everything I ever wanted. Like, he's gonna be my husband. I'm gonna have kids with him. But after a month, something in me didn't feel right. And I was like, I don't know what it is, because it feels perfect. It feels everything that I ever wanted. Why is this happening? But so each night is weird, because I'm not like super religious, but every night I was like, God, please tell me if I'm supposed to stay or go. And can you imagine? And I'm sure you've been there for almost 5 years, every day wondering, should I stay or should I go? It was so confusing and exhausting. And so oftentimes I would push it under the rug, or I would search like, why am I feeling this way? I had no idea. It wasn't until in the third year of being in the relationship where I started researching and like being like extremely obsessed with, why do I feel this way? It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel abusive, because I'm not being hit, but everything that I'm reading is saying that it's abusive, and I just don't understand. So it wasn't until your podcast where you are like really drilling it home. It's like, it's not normal. It is toxic, and you have to get out. And something like, there was so many things said to me and done, whether it be the control around what I wore, who I saw, or what I said, and I could never be good enough. But then there were sprinkles of, but you're perfect. So it was a back and forth, and the back and forth, and you know, the 3 hours staying up late at night with the circular conversations and waking up to love notes around the house. I'm like, I am so confused. And so eventually I lost all confidence. I couldn't even think clearly, because my brain was in survival mode. It created isolation from everyone that I loved, because I couldn't be who I was anymore, because I was terrified. I wasn't allowed to have certain emotions. Like, it was everything was very controlled. And so when I found your podcast, I was like, okay, I can continue to search out and ask questions, but I know the true answer is just, I have to be okay to leave. And it was the most terrifying thing. But eventually one thing happened that I was like, enough is enough. And I can't continue on this way. And I mean, it
That was your half past quarter till I don't give a crap moment.
Yeah, it was just like that's it. Like, this is done. Like, stuff like this has happened so many times in the past, but for some reason it was that moment where I was like, there's no freaking way I'm gonna let this happen any longer. Like, I am done. Yeah.
It's really hard to believe when you tell people that. And we talk, you know, you've heard me say the half past quarter till. My daughter wants royalties on that quote, by the way. But you will know when you're ready.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I did 14 years on the fence, and I've got, you know, people that have done 30 years on the fence. And we're not going to leave until we're ready, no matter how many people tell us. We have to fall on our face. We're the type of people who have to learn, from our own mistakes. We are also the type of people who are very emotional. So we kind of think about us, but we think about everybody else that's going to be affected first. And then it's easier to stay so that we don't cause all these ripples. But when you decide that you're not doing it anymore, you knew at that moment that that was the day, right? It might not be the day that you leave, but you will feel a change in, okay. And usually what it is it's an emotional disconnection. Now, the whole back and forth thing, it is caused by the emotionally abusive person or your emotionally controlling person that has learned to make you feel the way they need you to feel so that you do what they want you to do. So when you talk about, you know, the 3-hour circular conversation that you ended up taking the blame for, and then you wake up the next morning and there's love notes all over the house. The only thing we that is consistent about a toxic personality is that they're inconsistent. And the only thing that's predictable is that they're unpredictable. And they do that on purpose, second nature on purpose. They've gone through something in their life that makes them insecure in themselves. So they have to use people. And the emotional abuser will tell you what to wear or tell you what not to wear. And it doesn't matter what you put on, it's not going to be the right thing, right? And when they say stuff like that, it made you feel rejected, bad. Oh, but then the next day there's love notes and that makes you feel happy, right? And then the next thing is, you know, they disappoint you or they don't come home and now you're worried. That's an emotion. So all of that inconsistency, which led to your confusion, was purposely placed so that they can control how you feel. And then when you're trying to get out, they say, I can't believe that you're throwing everything away, and we feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the part that people don't understand is that we don't feel like we're in an abusive situation, but we don't realize that we're not in control of how we feel. And we operate off of our feelings. You know, how many times did you experience, you shouldn't feel like that? Or why do you feel like that?
Like, it's just a joke, like, relax. And it's but
you make
it
such
really
a
hurt me. Yeah, exactly. You're so sensitive.
Yeah. And so we learn that the way we feel about things isn't correct. So what we do is we start looking towards them like, okay, how do they think I should feel? And that is actually the foundation of, that's the goal of the emotional abuser, is to get you to be emotionally dependent, because they can be happy, they can be sad, they can make you mad, they can make you frustrated. And our attention is on them all the time to make sure that we don't cause any problems. You said earlier, you know, I didn't think it was abuse because I wasn't being hit. And every single one of us has probably thought that. Besides, we're all educated. We're not going to step into an abusive relationship. I did start using the word emotional control a little bit more with the new clients, because I remember thinking, no, I'm a smart lady. There's no way. I mean, that's for, you hear about domestic violence shelters. That's definitely not this. But I'll tell you, 16 years later, I'm still dealing with the emotional effects of trying to make sure that I'm following what my emotions feel like. If you don't start doing that, you'll just put your emotions on someone else. So tell us what your first steps were, in, because difficult situation, he's living with your parents with you.
Well, we actually ended up moving we lived only with my parents for three months. And then we almost like broke up the night before we were supposed to move. And then my mom, the morning of moving, she's like, I don't like you and you guys aren't good together. And like, you shouldn't be moving together. Meanwhile, there's the moving truck in my driveway. And it's like, well, that's pretty bad timing. So the whole move, he was completely silent with me. It was so awkward. He wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't look at me. We moved everything into our new house that we're living in. We're just renting. He slept in the basement. He didn't look at me. He didn't talk to me. Like I'm used to the silent treatment, but it still like obviously sucked. It sucks every time you get the silent treatment. It's like, I don't deserve this. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, it was him. Like, he left me and my son at the beach because he was mad. Meanwhile, there's a tornado warning and they're saying evacuate the beach, but he got pissed off and left us there. It's like, well, yeah, like I don't want you to come to the party then, because you said you didn't want to come anyways and blah, 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 blah. So,
hey, let's pick that apart just a little bit. Okay. Cause you were talking about the silent treatment. So this is the perfect scenario to do that. So it was a great day and everybody's at the beach and everything's wonderful. and he got mad at you. So he left you there with no ride, in danger if there was a tornado warning. You're there with your child, right? And you got upset. Or,
He got upset.
but you got upset because he left you.
He was like, "How do you? Why did you abandon us on the beach? Like,
Yeah.
let's have a
And
conversation."
how did he react to that
He
when
was
you said that?
he pretended like he was actually just leaving to get, to get a breath, and then he was gonna come back and get us. And like, obviously, I wasn't abandoning you, except he said, like, F this, F you, I'm leaving. It's like, well, no, you clearly said you're leaving us here to catch a cab home. And then he completely switched the
Right.
script and said
Okay.
something. It's like, no, what are you talking about?
Okay.
This is not
Okay.
happening.
So the scenario is it's a good day and you're having fun and your emotions are probably happy and, excited, and your attention was probably not all the way on him. So a fight erupted that probably never had to erupt. He had a reason to take the power and leave you. And when you said you left us and he said, no, I was really going to come back, and you were adamant with the fact that no, you left us, his choice in giving you the silent treatment was because he's not going to take responsibility. If someone gives you the silent treatment, you're never going to get closure. They don't ever have to admit that they were the one that perpetuated it. And as you know, the silent treatment in a household is so awful.
It's so thick.
Yes. Where is your attention when they're giving you the silent treatment?
On
On
focusing on him.
focusing on them, right? You're trying not to make the floor squeak and you're trying to do everything right. And if you clang two pans together, oh, it's too loud. So you're walking on eggshells the whole time. So he's feeling guilty because he actually knows he shouldn't have left you, but he's never going to take responsibility for that. So he's going to make you feel bad because he was going to come back and get you. And how could you not see that? But since you didn't back down, now I'm going to give her the silent treatment. And he knows it is torture for you to have the silent treatment in your house. Your attention's on him the whole time. And then what happens when the silent treatment breaks?
He says, oh, if you only would have said X, then none of this would have happened.
And so you go, okay, well, I can't stand living with this tension. So, okay, I'll just take the blame. Maybe you apologized. You said, let's just forget about it because you were so glad the silent treatment was over. So he knew he could make you feel anxious, feel vulnerable, feel scared while he was giving you the silent treatment. And then just like the love notes, okay, I'm going to make her take the blame and then she's going to be so relieved. Your attention was on him again as soon as the silent treatment was over.
And then I know what to do. And then I know never to do those things in the future. So he's like, well, that's great. There's another thing that he will
And
continue not to do.
we know the silent treatment is a total form of manipulation because it takes your power away. You don't get to have the conversation. You don't get closure on the conversation. They're not going to take responsibility, and it's so miserable. You finally go, okay, I should have just, and you take responsibility for it, and he gets, he gets away with leaving you with your son on the beach in a dangerous situation. Ta-da, it was your fault. Sorry, I had to go off on that because I don't have a ton of examples that are really good to explain why the silent treatment works. Our attention's on them when they're quiet, and then we're so relieved our attention is on them and they've used our emotions the whole way through.
Yeah.
So did you say that your mom said she didn't like him, or you said you didn't like him?
And she took him to the side and said, essentially, I wasn't there, but essentially, like, I don't like you and I don't want you as my daughter, and this, you guys shouldn't be moving in together. Meanwhile, we're literally moving our stuff out of their house into the moving truck to go to our new house. Because just because of everything that happened the day before, she was just like, like, what are you doing?
So, did your relationship with your mom change then?
I'm not then, like, it had all throughout the relationship. And just because obviously she didn't like the way that I was being treated, she didn't it was really hard. She didn't understand why I was staying.
So did he then, because of that conversation, did you feel more guilty when you wanted to talk to your mom because you knew that now there was animosity between the two of them?
I'm not really, just because he kind of already knew that they didn't necessarily approve of his behavior or the way that he treated me. So it wasn't any new news. He was just like, why would she bring that up? You know,
Okay, so did
great
he
bad
push?
timing.
Did he push then to get out of the house and take you with him?
Did he push me, like, is that why we are moving?
Like, did you feel like he was anxious to get out of there and get you with him?
No, like, so we moved out. I moved out of my parents' house, then we lived together in one house for 2 years, and then they had to sell the house. So our parents were going to let us live there for 3 months until we were able to find a new rental unit. So it was always going to be temporary. It wasn't the greatest living there, just because he didn't really like living there. And I think also, you know, we couldn't have the same kind of fights or arguments. Like, that was one of the rules, was you guys can't fight when we're here, which was great. So yeah, it was a little far. He just didn't like it. So that wasn't the reason why we left. But when we ended up moving into our new place, and it was all good, but nothing changed. Like, you know, we thought, oh, new place, everything is gonna be so much better. But if anything, it got worse. And I started noticing the little, like, the subtle ways that he would put me down. It was every single day. And I started noticing, and I thought it was like those big blow-ups, but it was actually every single day, just chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. Like, he would always call me selfish and self-centered, and how I was such a taker, and how I needed everything served to me on a silver platter, and all of these things. And,
And
like,
how
you
did,
know.
and when you hear that in your head, you really think, I'm not like that. But to keep conflict down and keep the peace, we tend to step it up a notch and quit our yoga class. Or, you know, it's easier for us to have conflict or quit things than to have conflict with them. And that the reason I'm mentioning this is you said isolation also earlier.
Yeah.
And that's how they isolate us. The criticism is the bully on the playground. If I can make you feel bad, I feel better. And you know that the criticisms that you were getting weren't true. That half of them were made up. But what did it make you feel like?
It made me feel awful. Like, it takes a lot to show up on social media, and I have a business, and I've had my business for almost 8 years. And so when I show up on social media, I'm trying to really, I'm putting myself out there. And when he would come back around and mock me and be like, "Oh, look at me, like I'm trying to be like so whatever," like, he would comment on what I wore, how I talked, or if I smiled in a photo for social media but sent him a photo not smiling. It's like, why did you give other people that smile versus not me? And when he would say I was selfish and such a taker, it made me so upset, because I'm like, I'm actually not a selfish person, and I try very hard not to be. And so it just made me like give to him even more and not rely on him even more.
It made you question yourself. And
Yeah,
that's
all the time. And then it made me reinforce, okay, Cass, you don't want to be a selfish person, so this is how you don't be a selfish person. So I never asked him for anything, no favors, and if I did, I'm like, I'm so sorry. Can you please help me out with this? Yeah.
yeah, and that's obviously why we end up feeling like we're not ourselves. Well, we're not
Yeah.
ourselves. And it's, you know, the toxic personality likes to attack the things we're the best at because that's how it's going to take us out of at the knees the fastest. You know, if you're super loyal, they're going to say you're not loyal. Well, they are not going to believe it if you say, no, I'm really loyal. You're going to have to, you know, just grueling through the next 10 months, try to prove how loyal you are and how honest you are and how not selfish you are. And where is our attention the whole time? We're trying to prove ourselves loyal and honest and unselfish.
Yeah, on them.
It's not on us. In fact, I haven't even announced this yet, but I'm having the online retreat that I used to run that started this business called Priority Me. It was before I ever started doing this, but I knew I could lead people into making themselves a priority in those relationships. That's coming up in May. I can give you the details later, but in these type of relationships, they don't want us to be a priority because they have to be. And by saying those things emotionally, we're emotionally wired. We do everything through emotion, you know. And okay, well, if they think that we're being selfish, well, maybe we are being selfish. You know, when you know logically you are not a selfish person, for some reason to gain acceptance from them, we change. And
yeah, like if you feel like you're being crushed, or like you feel like you are being physically beaten by them, and then they're the ones to lift you back up and be like, you look hurt, like let me help you. It's like, well, you're the one that hurt me. Like, what do you like? I'm so, yes, can you help me up, please? And then you run into their arms and then they soothe you. And then it's like, you're so confused and you don't want to feel upset by at them because you love them. And now that they're loving you and saying all the perfect things that you ever wanted to hear, it's like, you're so confused because it's like, how can those two coexist? But they do. And that's why
they
it
do.
makes it so confusing.
I'm going to refer the listeners to episode 191. It's the love bombing versus hoovering. It is the episode that I send out. I bet I tell people to listen to it 3 times a day. I bet I send that in text. Listen to 191. Love bombing, we know at the beginning, you already talked about that. It was so in love and everything felt so good. And then you felt a shift, right? You know, they need to get you to invest in the relationship. That's where the beginning starts. But then when you start questioning them, and you start withdrawing, or you try to break up with them, then the hoovering starts. And the first stage of hoovering is a little love bombing. Oh, that person from the beginning is back. And then, you know, you think, oh, thank goodness, everything's fixed. And really what they are doing is they're trying to get you to emotionally invest back. But that's where we usually go back, you know, and if we don't fall for the little love bombing part, then we get a bunch of different other personalities. And the confusing part is it's hard to leave when you're rationalizing the fact that it's not bad 100% of the time. You know, we shove all the crappy, shitty stuff under the rug. So then when we think, well, it's not bad all the time, all the junk's under the rug. So the only thing we see is when the love notes are around the house and when, you know, they puffed you back up and made you feel good. Or they, you know, they fakely apologized. And I say fakely apologized because you get apologies like, oh, I'm sorry, I got mad, but you pushed my buttons.
Yeah.
And we think that's an apology. That's making you take responsibility for them getting mad. But when we're seeking their approval and we're wanting no conflict and we just want peace, we can change how we feel faster than anybody. We should all be in Hollywood and we should all be the CIA because we gain those skills so much. So now I'm vaguely remember a couple months ago, maybe there was a post, and I think it was you on the beach.
Yeah,
right
I went to Costa
got
Rica.
Out or something.
Yeah, I went to Costa Rica. So I'll share with
how
you
did,
just
how
quickly.
Did you how go a little bit into the exit? How did
yeah,
you get?
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
All? Yeah.
So there was a blow up, and during this blow up, he gets in my face and he puts his finger in my face. And then he starts swearing at me and is aggressive, like with his tone. And I step back and I'm just like, what is happening? Because he was yelling and I'm asking him to like not yell. And anyways, it's this big blow up. And then he ends up packing his bags and leaving. And so when he left, in my heart, I was just like, I'm done. Even if he left for the night, I am done. And so the next day, he wanted to come back. He wanted to come back the next day, but I'm like, I need some time to think. And then I wrote myself a letter and I was like, Cass, he will change. He will 100%. He's going to be exactly what you want. It's going to be love and rainbows and sunshines, and it's going to be the perfect relationship, but it's going to be like that for 2 weeks, maybe three, and it will go back to the same. So I wrote myself this letter because I knew after all of the times in the past that I went back, probably 7 times, who knows? I've tried to break up and leave in the past, but every single time he knew exactly what to say in order to keep me to stay. And so I prepared myself in this letter. And then I wrote another letter to him. And it was just about, you know, I don't hate you. I'm not mad at you. This is just, I just can't do this anymore. And so I guess it was the second morning that he wasn't in the house. He texts me in the morning, and I'm on my exercise bike here in my office, and he texts me. He's like, "Are you done? Are we breaking up?" And I look at this photo of me when I'm like 4 or 5. It's in my office. Heidi can see it right now because we're on video, but I look at this photo of me.
In her high chair. She's in her high chair.
Yeah, with my curly hair and my little cute teeth, and I'm looking at her, and I'm like, "I'm gonna break the cycle for you." And then I look up to God. And I say, "Please just guide me through this and give me the strength to carry on." And I sent him the text saying, "Yes, I'm done." And I pressed enter, and that was the end for me. And it was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. But I felt so supported and loved. And when looking at that little girl, I knew that I had to break the cycle for my son, for future generations. And I knew that it had to start with me. And so, if anyone has a photo of them as a little girl, if they can look at the little girl and just chat with her and love her and then ask for support anywhere they need to, whether it be a higher power or what, that helped me. And I posted in the group as well, just saying that I did it, I left. And after that, and they were so supportive. They held me the night the night of the fight. They held me the morning of the breakup. I felt so held and loved and cherished and seen and supported by everyone in the group. And I couldn't have done it without them. I truly couldn't have. I didn't reach out to my family or friends because they don't understand it in the level of the women in the group. And then after that, I was like, "Well, heck, I've been taking care of everyone else. I'm going on a freaking trip." And so I messaged my aunt. I said, "I've just split up with my partner of 5 years. Can I come visit you in Costa Rica?" And she's like, "Yes, you can." And although the price of the flight was expensive, I was like, "I'm going. I'm gonna figure it out. I'm gonna go." And so something funny that happened was I was leaving on a Sunday, in March, and I was going to from Ottawa to Toronto, but my flight was delayed. And then I ended up getting to Toronto, and I missed my flight to Costa Rica by 2 freaking minutes. And I'm like, "Are you kidding?" And so from fighting and carrying on and sprinting through the airport, I was like, I'm gonna try. I had 2 minutes to try and race through the airport to get to my flight. And I raced through the airport. I have no idea where I'm going. I'm exhausted. I'm heartbroken. I'm confused and alone. And when I realized I missed my flight, I went to the nearest bathroom. I call my mom and sisters on FaceTime, and I do the ugliest cry I've ever done. And it's like the past 5 years was all bottled up, and it came out in that airport bathroom. Couldn't have planned it any better.
But you got to leave it there. It's all in the airport bathroom.
Exactly. And so I was forced to stay in Toronto for 2 days. It cut my trip by 2 days, but I was forced to just do nothing. And it was the best gift that God or whoever could have ever given to me, even though I wanted to be somewhere. Ultimately, you have no control. And so I needed those 2 days to heal and then just to carry on. And yeah,
I love that. So, for all of you listeners, her aunt's number that lives in Costa Rica will be posted in the so that when you exit, you can call her aunt and you can go to Costa Rica, right? I do have a question because the listeners are going to want to know this. What was the level of post-breakup contact? Did he try to contact you? How did he try to contact you?
He came over that day, like the day that I said I was done, and we sat in the living room to chat, and he was begging me and crying and sobbing and pleading, and he was saying, "I'll do this and that. I'll go to therapy. I'll do whatever you need. I won't ever do those. I won't ever yell at you again like that. I won't ever talk to you again like that. It will change. It will change." I'm like,
Okay, sorry, I like to fill the listeners in when I have a good example.
"Yeah."
Okay, one of the 21 character traits is that you're not going to get a sincere apology. And we talked about the, I'm sorry, I'm mad, but you pushed my buttons. This is the other type of apology you're going to get. And we believe it's because they sincerely care about the relationship. And what has happened is you stepping out from underneath their control and power has made them very insecure. And so when you get that first call of I'll take you on dates and I know what you and everything you said, I did, I'm so sorry, I'll fix it. That is not an apology. That is them trying to feel secure in themselves again, because you are now sneaking out of their control. And that's when we are the most vulnerable, because we're emotional. We've been waiting to hear those words forever. And when they say them, our personality, the emotionally wired personality, we are, and here's my t-shirt that I keep saying I'm going to make and I haven't, we're the benefit of the doubters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you said it once. Great. You know? And so now I'm guessing you're going to say you were strong enough to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, which I'm going to let you talk about in a minute, but that post breakup apology, you know, I'm going to treat you like a princess, put you on a pedestal. It doesn't have anything to do with how much they love you. It doesn't have anything to do with the relationship. It 100% has to do with the fact that they're feeling insecure because they're not in control. So if you can grit your teeth through that, which I'm guessing you did because you're sitting here right now, if you can grit your teeth through that, you will then see that it was another manipulation tactic. Okay, so now you can carry on. You were having contact from him and he was saying all the right things.
Yeah, so just before he was coming over to have that chat, I wrote myself yet another letter of all the things I knew he was going to say to me. And it's like I put a shield around myself and was like, Cass, these are all of the things that he's going to say to you. And these are all of the reasons why you're leaving. And so having these letters to myself really helped prepare me to not get sucked back in, because everything he was saying was all the right things, like going on more dates and treating me this way, never talking to me like that, letting me wear what I want, you know, all of these things. And I was like, oh, that all sounds great.
Okay. All the listeners, as she's saying these things, I want you to write them down. So you have a checklist. So when you leave, they're going to say the exact same things. It's literally the same things. I'll take you on dates. I'll, you know, all of that stuff, which is to me, it's a little bit humorous because I'm so good at predicting their behavior. I know how their brain works better than they do because theirs is all second nature. But anytime you can make a list of what to expect, it's easier for, if you know what to expect, it's easier to handle. So rewind the podcast where she starts listing those things and make a list for yourself because you can expect to hear them.
Yeah, okay. Right. And so having that list and knowing that it was all going to happen, it kind of gave me the strength to be able to continue to say, like, you need to be able to say no, like, so many times. You think that just saying I'm done, you say that once, you're going to say it a million times after, just to, because they're going to continue to beg and beg and beg. And it's like, you're going to have to continue to say no, I'm done, so many times. But each time I did, I said it with a little more confidence and a little more confidence and a little more certainty. And it's so cementing when you finally say that final, no, I am done. And then they finally get it. It's terrifying and equally liberating because it's like, oh, wow, I was able to stand up in that storm and not fall over. But in the past, I would have given in and be like, because every single time they're like, come on, come on, come on, come on. In the end, you usually just give in and you're like, okay, I'll give you one last chance.
But you give in because you're exhausted. The hoovering stage is to exhaust you. I remember it so well. I remember one time I just went, fine, I am so exhausted, I can't deal with this. So I had a question and it escaped me. And that happens all the time, the older I get. So when you got back from Costa Rica, was there communication there? Did he show up? How did you handle that? How did you handle getting out of the house or separating where you're living?
Yeah. So, he gave the rental place to me and my son. Me and my son, we moved out for 10 days so that he could come and pack. So we lived at my sister's for that time. He said he wanted to recoup his cost that he paid for rent that month. So he wanted to live there as well as pack. So I'm like, totally fine. Like, absolutely. Turns out that he as soon as I moved to my sister's that night, he's like, I realize I can't actually stay in the house. So I'm going to continue to stay at my parents'. So he didn't actually go to the house once. I guess he went like once, packed up some things, but it wasn't until the day after he was supposed to have all of his stuff moved out that he finally came to move his stuff out, and only because I boxed it all up and had it ready and sorted and ready for him to come and like pick it up. And so
And
I
actually, that was kind of premeditated on his part too. He didn't want to be there by himself doing it because he needed your attention. So him not going and you having to pack it up, you packed it all up, and then did he have contact with you when he came and picked it up?
Yeah, I was there
Yeah. So
because I was like, I
that was
really
the
need
plan.
you to come now because I'm hosting a workshop tomorrow. Like, you were supposed to have it out yesterday. You went on a date instead. Like, you gotta come and get your stuff, please. It was
Yeah.
actually helpful that he was already like dating someone.
Okay, that's only because he needs to feel that attention and he wasn't getting
For
it from
sure, yeah.
you.
And it hurt a
Yeah.
little bit, but then at the same time, I was like, but I prepared myself. And I told myself this was going to happen. It was only a matter of 1 or 2 weeks. And so I had to premeditate and prepare myself all of this stuff before I even made the decision to leave. Because prior to that, I wouldn't have been strong enough to accept that that was going to be the reality. I felt replaced. I felt not loved anymore, but it wasn't even that. Like, that's not even the truth of it.
Right. It's the emotional bond that you've created. How come I wasn't good enough? How come now he looks like he's happy? How come? And it's all a big smoke. It's a big smoke because he's just going to do the same thing to the next one and the next one. And if you're going to step out from underneath the control and power that he wanted so he felt better, he's going to, continue to move on. If you're not supplying them with what they need, they'll have to move on. The thing that we don't understand is they're not going to leave unless we make them leave. And they attracted to our emotional personality. And what you did was you made him leave your life. When you break up with somebody like this, the goal is not to break up with them and have coffee on Tuesday mornings. The goal is to get them out of your life because they have learned to control your emotions and your feelings are yours. So tell us where you are now and how are you doing now?
So, Dr. Heidi, I wish I could say it's completely no contact, and I wish I could say I haven't seen him since. That would be a lie to everyone in this group. But the difference is, I am completely 1000% detached, and I didn't think that was possible to fall out of love so quickly and to have it be completely detached. And so I live each day on my own terms. I wake up when I want, I do what I want, and even if he was to say send me a text, I look at it and it's like I don't have to respond
Okay, so
right now or ever.
let me ask you this. I'm going to put you on the spot. So if you don't know the answer to this, you can say, I don't want to answer that question. Okay, so why do you still have contact? What is it that you guys are still having contact about? You're getting a little coaching session. This is what I do to my clients. Isn't that terrible?
No, that's okay. There's three reasons. One, he is in a very dark place and he's been saying some things that I won't say, just because that's his own privacy. But I've felt like I fear the worst outcome, and so I'm there. I'm available, to be, I guess, his cheerleader when he's going through these dates. Hoping that maybe he'll find someone and then she can take care of him. I'm not taking care of him in any way, but by that. Number two, I'm still on his benefits. And I need that for therapy for both my son and I. Because I'm an entrepreneur, I don't have benefits. And three, he still has stuff in the garage. So we made an agreement, as long as you have stuff in the garage, then I can stay on the benefits. And as soon as the benefits is over, you have to get the stuff out, and then we close the curtain and we go our separate ways. So it's like if I just wanted to say, okay, screw the benefits, I'll just pay everything out of pocket, then it would just be completely done. Which I'm totally prepared to do.
Yeah. The thing, and the only reason I'm making you answer that is because there's listeners that are going through the same thing.
100%.
The toxic personality is going to latch onto any strings they still have attached to you. because if they have strings attached, they can still control, right? Confession is one of the is another one of the 21 character traits. That is dumping something big on you so you feel guilty and stay in their life. So if the talk that he's having is making you feel guilty, like you have to stay there, he's trying to make you responsible for that. And that was what you stepped out of the relationship for. So he is a grown man. If he chooses to do something that's not healthy for him, that's no longer your responsibility. That's his. But our emotional brains feel like it is.
Yeah.
So just think about that.
For sure.
He's going to leave stuff in your house because then it gives him a reason to contact you. So think of a date that you can take over the health insurance and that the stuff can be gone. Because if you can make him responsible, you can take over the health insurance and his stuff is out of the house, you have cut all the strings that you have attached to him. And he won't be able to sneak back in. Good for you.
I have that date. I mean, I'm 2 months out. I know most, or at least some of the women, they don't get to have the exit smooth. Like, it's been really smooth. It's been respectful. He's been nothing but nice and kind. So I haven't had the chance to get angry at him. I haven't had the chance to like hate him. And that's not what I want either way. Like, I'm working through all of this in therapy. Honestly, it makes it that much more confusing.
You won't hate him because our personalities don't hate.
No.
And I think, you know, we feel like we're supposed to be mad and feel like we're supposed to be angry. And I have this a lot with the people who are thinking of getting divorced. Well, I don't, but I still love him. Of course you do. You've got time invested. You cared about him. He was part of your life. And so you kind of have to wrap your head around I'm always going to care. That's just, that's our personality. I am so proud of you. I can't even tell you how proud I am. She did mention she had a blessing of a quite calm dissolving. Most of you are not going to have that. They just leave the house. That's okay. Every situation is different. There's a way around everything. Always know that there's an option. I love the fact that you wrote letters to yourself. I think that is a fantastic idea.
I have to add one thing, Dr. Heidi, something that tremendously helped me and that might help other women in the group. And I'm so sorry to cut you off. It just came through to me and I was like, I don't want to forget this. On January 1st, 2024, I started the 75 Hard Challenge. It's a free challenge that you can take. It's all about taking care of your body, working out, drinking water, eating healthy. And because I was still doing that challenge during the breakup, I was forced to take care of myself. I couldn't drink alcohol. I couldn't eat sugar. I couldn't take out. I had to work out. I had to take care of myself. And that was the biggest blessing because so often we don't take care of ourselves in those moments. And so maybe that's why I felt so good only 2 months out, is because I was forced to still take care of me and make me the top priority. And so if even anyone is thinking of leaving or has left and is feeling like they're not doing well, then to try this 75 Hard Challenge, because it's been absolutely life-changing. I can't recommend it enough, especially going through this toxic relationship.
Yep. And you are exactly right, because, you know, I have in my private client section of my business, people come to me at all different stages. Some of them don't know what their goal is. Some of them need clarity. Some of them have made the decision to leave. And I start the self-discovery and the making yourself a priority immediately. Because as soon as you do that, you're going to have a lot clearer vision of what you should have been focusing on and what you were focusing on, which, again, the Priority Me retreat that's coming up, it's exactly for that. It's, you can be in it. You can be out of it. You can be long time out of it. If you just need a boost, that's kind of what that retreat was prepared for. And I'll make an announcement now too. Cass is one of the guest speakers at the retreat. So tell us a little bit about what you do and where people can find you.
Yeah. So I help people declutter and organize their homes. But beyond that, my mission is to help women live their best and happiest life. And I believe that in order to do that, we need to live with a lot less clutter in our hearts and in our minds. And so that's what my big focus is on. I speak on that on my podcast, the Transform Your Life podcast. I do YouTube videos Essentially, you can find me everywhere at Transformed Spaces. But my upcoming program, Clutter to Calm, is right in alignment, Dr. Heidi, with your program. It's about really gaining clarity around who you are, what do you want, and what do we need to do to get there, implementing things like boundaries and positive self-talk and all of those things, decluttering not just our physical environment, but everything that's not serving us. And that's so exciting, and I'm so excited to be able to speak in that retreat.
I think it's, you know, part of that retreat is when we think, okay, we got to take care of ourselves. We don't know what that means. Okay. I remember thinking, okay, do I go get here? Because that didn't help me. I don't feel any better.
Yeah.
And so the retreat is geared towards, you know, you don't have to do it all on the same day. It's step by step. And then you discover that you feel better when you start taking care of yourself. So thank you so much. I know I put you on the spot. I know I used you as a learning tool, and I kept interrupting you because you had such good examples of certain things that I know the listeners are struggling with as well. And we'll look forward to seeing you at the retreat.
Yes, thank you so much. It was so nice chatting with you.